Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today, part two of our series, or my series, on financial mastery for e-com store owners. I'm really excited about this series. Kicked it off last week. If you didn't catch the episode with part one, commandment number one, which is your money, your responsibility. And this week, commandment number two. Commandment is a strong term. Not sure if I'm totally convinced that these concepts are not going to change for the next 2,000 years of entrepreneurship, but we're going to roll with them. Commandment number two, which is master your financial statements. I have to say, this is a hard one to record. I've recorded this episode probably three or four times already and scrapped it because it's difficult to try to put something out there that's not too simplistic and also not too in the weeds. I love finances. I'm a finance geek. And even my capacity to listen to people talk about financial statements on a podcast is pretty diminished. So my goal with this episode is not to tell you the nuts and bolts of the income statement, the balance sheet, the cash flow statement. Those are things probably are better suited for doing, you know, with a little, you know, some chats with ChatGPT, a few blog posts, et cetera, et cetera. I want to tell you probably in, for each one of those, the one or two things that you are likely misunderstanding, lightly not thinking about, or are so important that it's absolutely necessary you don't overlook them. So that's what this episode is going to be about. And we'll try to keep it brief. Like I said, recorded this multiple times, ended up cutting it in half just to keep it concise. And I'll be doing, like I mentioned last week, once we wrap up with the podcast series, going to be doing a whole series of live events for each one of these pillars slash commandments where we can dive into these much more. And stay tuned to the rest of the, at the end of the episode, I'll tell you how you can get involved in those if you're interested. So one quick note though, before I jump in to the episode today, I am doing something I haven't done in a couple of years, the Ecom Fuel Trends Report. This is a wide-ranging, in-depth study to figure out what in the heck is going on in our industry. It's been a crazy year. So many of the things that I feel like that we use to think about, you know, where our industry is headed, how people are doing, are very anecdotal. I heard so-and-so is doing, having a hard time. I heard such-and-such is struggling with this or doing great in that area. But data, it's so much more helpful to get an aggregate, to make decisions based on data. Shocking, right? So that's what this is. I think the last study I did had 400 or 500 participants, and it covers every facet of e-com from revenue growth to margins to paid acquisition performance to employees, all the things. So if you run a store, would love to have you involved. ecommercefuel.com/trends is where you can go to participate. And if you love the finer things in life, you love traveling, not feeling like a piece of meat when you get to your destination, I'm giving away as a shameless bribe a round trip ticket in business class anywhere in the world up to $5,000. First class airline or business class airline ticket anywhere in the world. So ecommercefuel.com/trends. If you run a store, if you like the finer things in life when you travel, we'd love to have you participate. All right, let's go ahead and get into the episode. So commandment number two, master your financial statements. Three financial statements. You've got the income statement, the balance sheet, and the cash flow statement. Your income statement is often called the P&L. Those are interchangeable, income statement and P&L. And before we dive into each one, I want to use a quick analogy to help you think about the purpose that each one of these serves. So imagine you have an airplane and imagine your business is an airplane. Your income statement is determining and really telling you about the direction and the trajectory of your aircraft or your business. If you stay on this path, are you going to end up where you want to be going, to the airport you want to fly to have a business that is healthy in the long term that you could sell, that is sustainable? That's what your income statement is. Your balance sheet is similar to the structural integrity of your aircraft. If you hit a big storm, if you have to take a 90-degree turn and pull 5Gs in your little Cessna 172, are the wings going to come off? How resilient is your craft, is your business to shocks and to turbulence? And then finally, cash flow, your cash flow statement, and just cash in general, think about that as the fuel of your airplane. You could own the nicest G7 Gulfstream jet. nothing wrong with it, pristine condition. You could have U2 and Bono on board flying, like ideal circumstances. If you run out of fuel, it is going down. Doesn't matter, you know, how perfect it is. So that's the way that I would recommend thinking about those three financial statements in terms of what they're trying to tell you about your business with the aircraft analogy. All right, income statement. We're going to start here first. So again, I'm not going to go through all of the details of how this works. What I want to focus on is the thing that you may be missing with your income statement. And there's a good chance that your income statement is probably, at least in some way, deceiving you or not giving you the full picture. First and foremost, most people probably know this. Your income statement is giving you your paper, your profitability on paper, but not determining your cash. I think most people know that. If you don't, you should kind of dive into accrual versus cash-based accounting. It's an important differentiation. But once you get past that, the most important thing to know is that your income statement is giving you just an overall average of all of your channels and all of your products all meshed into one. And so a hugely important thing to know that most people don't is your contribution margin. And so let's talk about two things, gross margin versus contribution margin. So gross margin on your income statement gives you a sense of how healthy your product branding is, your supply chains. It gives you a sense of the cost to manufacture your product in a very basic sense. So, you know, you sell widgets for, let's say you sell podcasting gloves for $100 a pop, because man, you got to have podcasting gloves on, right? Podcastgloves.com could be a good business. You sell them for $100 a pop. They cost you $20 to make and get to your warehouse. That's $80 profit on $100 revenue, 80% gross margin. That's your gross margin. Contribution margin. And there's lots of different ways you can break this down. Some people will break it down into different levels. Contribution margin gives you a sense of how much of that sale, after you account for all of the variable costs of selling those podcasting gloves, you've got to go out and advertise to get people, you know, especially if you're driving performance-based campaigns on Google, on Meta, you got to take into account your customer acquisition cost. You've got to take into account the packaging. You've got to take into account the postage, the shipping, the credit card fees, all those kind of things. Contribution margin tells you, once you have taken care of all of the variable costs of selling this product, getting it out the door, getting it to your customer, how much is left to go towards your overhead, your fixed costs, your payroll, your rent, things like that, and your profit. That's the difference between gross margin and contribution margin. All right, let's walk through an example, a real world example here of why you want to be thinking about your contribution margin. And side note, contribution margin is not something that is on your income statement. You can customize income statements /P&Ls to some degree, but generally you're not going to get this level of customization from a contribution margin standpoint. Most people that are going to be doing this are going to be doing this in a side spreadsheet, kind of doing it for different products and categories and channels in a side spreadsheet. And it's something that maybe you update on a regular basis when every time your P&L comes up, but more than not, you calculate it to understand the contribution margin for different products, for different channels. So you just have more nuance as opposed to just one number. So here's an example. Let's say we're buying gym equipment. Let's say we go over to bellowsofsteel.com, run by Kayvon, who is the co-founder over there. Great guy. He's got an awesome company. Recently picked up some stuff from him. If you're in the market for anything home gym related, check him out. And these are all hypotheticals, but he's just, you know, kind of came to mind for me today. Let's say Kayvon's selling two things. He's selling a workout bench and a barbell. And both of those retail, he's selling for $400 a pop. The workout bench has a gross margin of 65%, not bad. And the barbell has a gross margin of 50%. Yeah, not so great, right? So which one are you going to actually put more time and effort and energy into? What you don't know yet, which is why you need to dive into the contribution margin. So when we dive a little deeper, we see that the barbell, the contribution margin is 40%, which means of that $400 we sell it for, 40% of that amount, $160, is pure, clean, extra, you know, profit or something, not profit per se, but we can put it towards either our overhead or our profitability, one of those two. Whereas you look at the workout bench, it only has a contribution margin of 30%. So only $120 goes toward our overhead and our profitability. And let's say maybe because the barbell has lower shipping costs, maybe it costs less to acquire customers for there because it's, you know, it's a barbell. It's, you know, it's not as complicated as this workout bench. So that's a classic example of where your gross margins can be very misleading. And if you don't understand your contribution margin, you're going to be allocating time and resources and energy suboptimally in a way that is going to actually cost you and not make you as much money. All right, let's do one more example here. Let's say I'm going to be starting a business called podcastgloves.com. I mean, you got to have gloves on when you're podcasting, right? You can't just be out here like a wild animal with bare hands trying to type and move the microphone around. See, I don't have my podcast gloves on and I'm just stuttering and making a mess of myself. Podcastgloves.com. It's Black Friday. It's Cyber Monday. Let's say, hey, everyone else is running these huge sales. I'm feeling left out. I got to drive revenue. I'm going to run a 20% sales off, right? I can, you know, I got amazing gross margins. My gross margins are 80%. I'm giving up a quarter of my profitability for, you know, to make sure I have a sale, drive some revenue. Not a big deal. Except that that's wrong, or almost certainly wrong, because if I dove into it, and let's say my overall contribution margin is 40%, which is half of my gross margin, right? So 40% of my $100 sales per gloves goes toward my overhead and towards my profitability. That means if I run a 20% sale, I'm giving away at least, at minimum, probably more, but at least 50% of my profits, because all that's left, that's just by definition how it works. So contribution margin helps you make real decisions about the magnitude of the sales, of which products to go after, et cetera. So this week, what should you do? If you're not doing this already, you should go calculate the contribution margin of your top 10 to 20% of your products, whatever's driving, let's say, like, you know, the top, the 80-20 principle, right? Sometimes it's difficult to do this for every single thing, but do it for your top, your big movers that drive the needle, and for your top, you know, couple channels, 2 to 3 channels for your business. Doesn't have to be perfect. Back napkin it, make some assumptions, do your best to try to figure out CPA if you can on a campaign or a product basis. I'm hoping to put together something in the future that makes this easier from a guide and a workflow perspective, but this is something we'll be doing in the live sessions in the coming weeks and months, which I'll tell you about how to join here at the end of the week. So that on the income statement side, you really deeply need to understand contribution margin versus just your gross margin. All right, the balance sheet. So again, if you think back to our analogy, the balance sheet gives you a sense of your businesses or your aircraft's stability and structural stability. How well can your business deal with shocks, bad weather, unexpected circumstances, things like this? Let's say there's two businesses that you could take over tomorrow. One has revenue that's up 50%. One has contribution margin of 30% and is just crushing it. That's business A. Business B only is seeing revenue growth of 20%. The contribution margin is 25%, a little bit lower, growing much slower. Which business do you want? Well, in this case, I want business B, because business A, unless you dive into this, and you don't know this, of course, but if you dive into the balance sheet and you look at what's going on under the hood from a capital perspective, business A is managing inventory really poorly. They only turn it twice per year, which means they sell through their inventory. It takes them about 6 months to sell through it. Because of that, all their cash is going to finance huge purchase orders that aren't being optimized well. Because of that, because they don't have cash, they're having to take out merchant cash advances. And they literally have 2 weeks of operating expenses in the bank. So while they are growing faster and have contribution margin of 30%, the way they are, you know, dealing with inventory, working capital, financing is kind of a disaster. Now, business B turns their inventory 4 times per year. They sell through it 3 times, you know, 4 times a year. Every 3 months, they sell through it, doing a much better job of that. Better job ordering, better job forecasting. And because they have less cash tied up in inventory, they have significantly more money in the bank, which means they have a lot more cash as a buffer. They got, you know, 3 or 4 or even maybe 5 months of cash in the bank to deal with issues that pop up. So company B, even though they're growing more slowly, their contribution margin is as well, has a much better chance of living to see the next year than company A. And just like our Gulfstream analogy from before, if your company is fantastic on paper, but you run it into a mountain, it's not worth a whole lot. So the most important thing on a balance sheet perspective to understand as an e-commerce store owner, especially, is that growing e-com businesses are massive cash pits, massive cash black holes. Perhaps this is obvious if you've been in the game for a while, or if you've run a really fast growing e-commerce business that has inventory, you understand this, but this catches a lot of people by surprise. Hey, it's Andrew here, the quick sidebar to introduce you to Tal from popsmith.com. He's one of the owners over there where they create the absolute coolest, most delicious popcorn popper I've ever seen. I love it. Our kids love it. And Tal is an OG. He's been in the community for 10 years, instrumental in being getting it going and off the ground and leading a number of meetups in California, and just a fantastic guy. And here's a snapshot of his experience with the community over the years with e-commerce fuel, our community for 7 and 8-figure store owners.
So many benefits to being part of the community. So many really sincere, hardworking, really smart business owners. They're all in e-commerce, just like me. So it's just been such an awesome community to be a part of, and so much value add opportunity from people that are in the trenches, just like me, doing e-commerce, staying relevant, working hard. Incredibly deep friendships that I've made and deep connections that I've made throughout the years. And I mean, just so much business benefit. And it's a community that it's one of the few communities that I'm actively a part of, and a community that I genuinely want to not just benefit from, but to give back, because that's how much I care about the members that are all part of this. They're all just trying to be decent human beings, decent entrepreneurs, and be better at work and life. And so the value has just been, I mean, it's invaluable, the connections and the value and the advice that I've gotten from the community. Big believer, huge fan, will be with it, in it, as long as, well, forever. Appreciate you.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7 or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. So this is particularly important to understand, especially if you're kind of earlier on in the game or if you've never grown really quickly. And why is this? Because as you grow, your inventory is growing. So more of your profitability needs to go in your inventory. Not only that, but you have to pay for that inventory months in advance when you issue your purchase orders. Depending on the terms that you have with your suppliers, your accounts receivable are going to go up, especially if you're selling via wholesale. You've got to deliver that product to your vendors, and they may not pay you for 30, 60, 90 days, depending on those terms. And that sucks up cash. So you need to know this and you need to plan for this. And we're going to get into the how you do that well in the cash flow section. But one thing that's important to think through is how does your months of inventory, how do your working capital levels look from an inventory perspective? So the amount of inventory you have in terms of what's good, what's bad, is going to vary a lot based on the industry and a lot of different variables. But here's some very rough guidelines. And again, take these with a huge grain of salt because they vary. If you are selling through your inventory every 30 to 45 days, you are elite, world-class elite. It's impressive. If you're selling through every 2 months and you're turning it every 2 months, turning your inventory 6 times a year, that's pretty great. 2 to 3 months is probably, in the average to good range. If it's taking you 4 to 6 months to sell through inventory, that's definitely suboptimal. Something is probably wrong. And if it's taking you more than 6 months to turn your inventory, you're tying up a ton of cash, and something is wrong systemically, likely, in your business. You need to think through this. So that's capital levels. When you think about a cash buffer, and the reason I'm talking about these are things that your balance sheet is going to tell you. If you keep a cash buffer, that's going to vary based a lot. It's going to vary based on how risky you think your business is. It's going to vary based on the ownership structure of your business. So I am the sole owner of my business. So when I look at my emergency fund for my business versus my emergency fund for my personal life, they're kind of interchangeable, not exactly, but I can inject capital into my business if I need to because I'm 100% owner. I can just, hey, we need to do this, done. If you own a business with 3 or 4 people, that's much harder to do. So you need to keep a dedicated cash emergency buffer. But in general, you know, you're going to want to have, ideally, I think most people would say you want to have 3 months of operational expenses in the bank, maybe even six. That's going to be hard for a fast-growing company where cash is a huge premium in e-commerce space, but that's nice to have 3 to 6 months. So need to think through that. Look at that, you know, and that's another, how well can your business and your aircraft frame endure unexpected things? Cash always gives you options. And then, you know, your accounts receivable with when you are sending those out to, again, in the wholesale world, the more you're able to negotiate better terms, the more you're going to be able to decrease those. But if you have massive accounts receivable that keep growing and growing and growing, that's also going to cut into your ability to have, you know, it's going to blow up your working capital and make it harder to deal with cash well. So the other important thing on the balance sheet side you need to think through is it's important to have your balance sheet set up correctly. And what do I mean correctly? You need to make sure that you have accounts set up on your balance sheet that show transparently where inventory is. So if you've ordered inventory and it hasn't hit your warehouse yet, you should have an account that says, you know, a prepaid account on the asset side of things that says prepaid inventory or inventory in transit. So you can see that. You need to make sure you track your accounts payable and your accounts receivable correctly. If you take revenue, let's say you do pre-sales and, you know, you do a crowdfunded thing and people are paying for stuff 6 months ahead of time and you get all that revenue, or maybe you even launch it to your own site, you take pre-orders. You need to account for that correctly. Like, you can't dump that all into your revenue. You need to put that into, if you take a bunch of money for pre-orders, that is technically, well, it's not technically, it is a liability on your balance sheet. You took money that you haven't delivered a product for. That's a liability. I hate having money on my balance sheet that is not mine. I always put it away in a separate account. Don't touch it, because it's very dangerous if you start thinking about that as just your money. It's not your money. It's other people's money. So you need to make sure you're tracking carefully your prepaid assets and your liabilities, your prepaid liabilities, things like that. So this week, what should you do on the balance sheet? Make sure you go through, take a look at your inventory, your working capital, your cash in the bank, how well your balance sheet actually gives you an accurate representation of your business in terms of its capital structure, who owns what, all those things. So that is your job for this week if you don't feel like you've got a good handle on that right now. All right, our final financial statement, the cash flow statement, and we'll be lumping the cash flow forecast into this as well. Probably the least understood of all of the financial statements. So if you remember our original analogy, cash flow in your business, in your airplane, is like fuel. You can be profitable on paper. Your P&L can say you are crushing it for 24 months in a row, 2 years in a row, record profits. Profits that make the IRS drool and your CPA thrilled and your mom so proud. And yet you can still go bankrupt because you did not manage cash well. Maytab Bogle, longtime friend of the podcast, ECF member, one of the operators, hosts, he works with a lot of distressed companies. And he had a tweet recently that said, along the lines of paraphrasing, but he said the biggest thing that his distressed companies have in common is that they did not manage cash well. So, quick little example to illustrate this. Why? How can this happen? So let's say you make $250,000 on profit. You look at your P&L, your income statement, end of the year, $250K. You know, it's your first year or two. Big deal. Things are great. Here's the problem. You plowed $150,000 of that back into inventory because you're growing so fast and you're like, we got to support next year's growth. Get $100,000 in other expenses that also added to that. So that sucked up all of your revenue for the whole year. And now, in all of your cash, and now you have payroll coming up and your bank account is empty. Oh, and even, you know, cherry on top, taxes are due on your $250K of paper earnings. You did not set any of that money aside. So now you owe, say, call it $80,000 in real taxes, and you're underwater $75K before even having to make payroll. So you've got a lot of nice inventory and you've even got 10% off because you know, hit those certain minimum order quantities to get that quantity discount. Congratulations, but doesn't do you any good when the IRS is coming after you and all of your employees quit because you're not paying them. So that is the kind of scenario where you're going to run into if you don't think about cash. So important to understand the difference between a cash flow statement and a cash flow forecast. So cash flow statement, this is going to be the thing that you can run in QuickBooks or Xero, and it's going to show you, it is backward looking. It is going to show you where your cash went. And actually what it does, this is, you know, super nerd corner, but it's going to start with your net income on your profit and loss statement, your income statement. And then it is going to show you all of the reasons why your net income was not the change that you had in your cash. It will reconcile. It's the bridge between saying, here's what we said you made on paper, and here's why you actually can make $250K and lose $10,000 in cash, and explains that to you. So that's nice. Cash flow statement is nice while you are sitting weeping in your mom's house, you know, kind of mourning the loss of your business. You can look at it and say, oh, here's why I don't have a business anymore. But what's nicer and what's more helpful is to do a cash flow forecast. This is a forward-looking exercise that you do. Most people, almost everyone I know does this on a spreadsheet. And I'll talk to you. I've got a template for you here in just a minute. Because it's not, there's not a lot of great software that can do this. QuickBooks and Xero or whatever you're using is probably not going to, well, almost certainly is not going to be a good tool for doing this. So most people do this on some kind of spreadsheet that they have. And the way it works is kind of the gold standard is a 13-week or a 3-month cash flow forecast. So you forecast your cash by week for the next 3 months by making assumptions about what do I think my revenue is going to be for this period? What are the expenses that I have? Oh, when am I going to be placing that big purchase order for fall? When do I have to make my quarterly tax payments? Oh, we wanted to like take a distribution so that the team could actually see a little bit of money. And you know, we've been doing this for 4 years. We'd love to be able to upgrade from the 1989 Honda Accord, maybe get a 2001 Prius or whatever it is. Like all of those assumptions about cash, you work those in and it gives you a very imperfect, but an idea of where your cash position is going to be. And anyone who has done this before is going to tell you, you're going to be off almost every time. You almost 99% of the time, you're not going to be correct. But what you can do is it directionally helps you see big issues you're going to run into. And every week that you do it, you get better at it because you can say, oh, I didn't think about this. Ooh, I forgot about this here. Okay, these assumptions were a little bit, you calibrate, you self-calibrate. And the delta between what you forecast and what actually happens can shrink over time. So I am not going to walk you through how to do this on the podcast because you would gouge your ears out with a crocheting needle, probably. Not a fun exercise, but I got you covered. If you are in the EconFuel community, go into the forums and search for customizable cash flow forecasting. And it will pop up with a model that I have built exactly for this, as well as a walkthrough of how to use that model. If you're not in the community, head on over to ecommercefuel.com/newsletter. I'm going to be sending out a link to the model template that you can download and use, video walkthrough, as well as ongoing assets for this series. So ecommercefuel.com/newsletter. So this week, what should you do? If you are still rusty on the three big financial statements, go chat with ChatGPT, go chat with your accounting uncle, pick up Financial Intelligence for Entrepreneurs, do some digging in the EconFuel forums if you're a member. Whatever you need to do, get a working understanding of those. That's first and foremost and kind of was an assumption for this podcast. If you feel like you've got kind of the basics down, three things, again, just to recap, for your income statement, calculate the contribution margin of your top 10 to 20% of products that drive revenue and your top 2 to 3 channels. Get a sense of where you should be, where you should be investing and prioritizing your time, and get a real sense of how much those discounts are actually costing you. Secondly, for your balance sheet, how well are you managing your working capital? Do you have reserves in case you hit a huge storm? How is your inventory turn? How much inventory do you have relative to, you know, are you doing a great job of managing it or are you pretty suboptimal and need to tighten that up? And then finally, for the cash flow statement, if you have not done one, if you are not doing one now and you run an inventory-based business, start getting in the habit of doing a weekly cash flow forecast. Even the exercise itself, if you don't necessarily, even if you're way off, it helps you get closer to the numbers, thinking through this more clearly, and decreases the chance that you are going to run out of cash exponentially. Next week, commandment number 3, optimize your big 3 profit levers. There are 3 things in your business financially, in my experience, in the experience that I've observed with, you know, hundreds of other store owners, that are going to have a massive outsized influence on your profitability. We're going to talk about those next week and which ones to prioritize. If you own a store, I would love to have you involved in the EconFuel Trends Report I mentioned at the top. You can go ahead to ecommercefuel.com/trends to take that report or to take that survey. I'm going to be giving away, like I mentioned, a business class round trip airline ticket anywhere in the world, valued up to $5K. So head over there if you run an e-com store. And then finally, if you want that cash flow model, or if you just want to get all the resources from this series, and also know and hear about when I'm going to open up the live classes for this series. I'm going to do a live class on each one of these pillars and commandments that goes into more depth, that brings in guest speakers. This can be really fun. ecommercefuel.com/newsletter, and I'll make sure to send you the model as well as keep you updated. All right. Next week, the three things with massive outside influence to prioritize for your profitability. I'll see you then. If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.